There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. There are places in the Near East where to find something is significant. Then there are places in the Near East where to find that thing, in this case, the possible existence of a first century synagogue, is, well, a bigger deal. Places like Galilee, where Jesus walked, where he actually is said to have taught in the synagogues, where he ran the synagogue circuit, so to speak, in his ministry in northern Israel. And there's one in the headlines here in the New York Times, yesterday's edition: a resort in Galilee rises where Jesus may have taught. And there's even more to the story. They think perhaps they've found Magdala, the home of the famed Mary Magdalene. Joining us to talk about a reported discovery of a first-century Jewish synagogue in Galilee, Dr. Paul Meyer, professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo and author of numerous books, including his latest publication, The Constantine Codex. Dr. Meyer, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be with you, Todd.
How big of a deal is the discovery of a synagogue period, a first-century synagogue period, any place in the Holy Land?
Well, it is a big deal simply because a lot of critics were saying the New Testament is wrong and saying Jesus taught in synagogues in Galilee. They first claimed there never has been a synagogue discovered in Galilee, which is ridiculous because at Caesarea they found an archaeological expedition that mentions the synagogues in Galilee, plural. There have been only seven discovered in Israel so far, however, so it's a big deal, but especially it's a big deal because the chances that they did find the home, I should say the place where the hometown of Mary Magdalene is about 95% certain. It's quite a discovery in that respect.
What about the discovery led them to believe that they were standing not just upon the site of a first century synagogue, but perhaps on the site of Magdala itself?
Well, for decades, that site was known. As a matter of fact, it was standard on the pilgrim groups that went to Galilee that on the west shore there, on the way toward Capernaum, that the synagogue, that there was a synagogue there, had not been discovered yet, but necessarily the location of Magdala was well known, and so there were very few objecting to that as a location. Now, when they tried to build a resort there, the Roman Catholics had a fine idea. Father Solara was his name. Juan Solara was going to build a Christian retreat center for Christian pilgrims in Galilee. And they started digging, and they found then the centerpiece, which was the Jewish synagogue in Magdala, as well as the surrounding area, which was most probably nearer the core of the city than the Franciscan site further north. So it is quite a big deal in the sense that Magdala was well known in the ancient world. They took the fish caught in the Sea of Galilee there, and they cured them, turned them into salt fish for export. And some of the pools there have been discovered that they used that were full of brine for that purpose. So it's kind of exciting. I guess the amazing thing to me is the fact that this has not happened more often. That is, a religious group wanting to build a retreat center along the very Sea of Galilee where Jesus taught and walked and did his miracles. I'm surprised this hasn't happened before. As a matter of fact, the whole shoreline of the Sea of Galilee is shockingly vivid in terms of New Testament panorama, because I'm just amazed that, you know, American real estate agents didn't have title to the shoreline, in which case we wouldn't be able to see the Sea of Galilee today. But the place today looks very much as it did in Jesus' day. So every time I take a group to the Holy Land, I'm always very, very impressed by how beautiful and rural the Sea of Galilee still is. In fact, there's only one place built up, and that would be the town of Tiberias at the middle southwestern end of the Sea of Galilee. The rest is still very rural.
You mentioned a moment ago that some contended that we couldn't find first century Christ era, if so to speak, synagogues in Israel. Why did they raise that objection? Why did they say such discoveries would be impossible?
Well, it's simply part of the usual critical cant, which is, let's try some way to detach the New Testament from any historical fact of the past. And so, because synagogues are mentioned in the Gospels, the first century Gospels, obviously, they then try to say this was impossible. Well, that is very much now passé. It's been demonstrated that there are, as I say, seven other first-century synagogues have been discovered in Israel. The one in Capernaum, where Jesus taught, is probably a third-century synagogue, however, not first century.
What kind of a structure are we talking about, a synagogue? What, I know that there, it varies, but what was the standard for, and how archaeologists know when they're examining these sites and ruins, that they're looking at a synagogue?
That's right. I mean, there's no sign out in front. This is a synagogue from the first century. That'll come later for the tourists. But generally, there'll be a ritual bath there very often, a mikvah, they're called. And you'll also find an altar area, a tabernacle in stone very often, where the Holy Torah is kept, and the priest, I should say, the rabbi will read it on special occasions. And then you will also find benches there, either, well, not wood anymore, but stone benches. That's very, very typical. And so often there are mosaics in the wall also, which, of course, don't depict any human figures or anything like that, but they will be beautiful designs to enhance this hall for the Lord, you might say.
There's also, in conjunction with this discovery, the synagogue bench was the initial red flag for the archaeologists. They said also they discovered a coin in that area or around this area that they could date to what we would say 27 A.D. Why is that significant?
Well, because certainly it was either the beginning of Jesus' ministry or that of John the Baptist. Actually, Luke tells us it was in the year 29, so this is 2 years before the beginning of Jesus' ministry that this coin was found. So, I mean, I should say that this coin was minted and now found, so that's a pretty thrilling numismatic discovery.
Do they, I mean, obviously they don't have dates on the coins, but they have some means of saying this is the coin. What, the inscription or the likeness
well,
on there?
Well, they have virtually dates on those coins, certainly not our B.C. A.D. system, but in the year, let's say the fourth year of Emperor Nero or something like that, that's very typical.
So what would have happened in these synagogues? Why were they built? What was their purpose in Jewish life?
To commemorate once a week on the Sabbath, that is Saturday, the worship of God, to read his word, to pray. There, of course, were strict rules as to how the synagogue service should go. The men and women were separated, of course, at that time. And this was the equivalent of a Jewish church, you might say.
Does the existence of a synagogue, especially a significant one, one that appears to have, because of its, you know, the nature of its construction, lasted, at least in ruined form, does the existence of that say something about the Jewish population in these areas?
Yes, for one thing, if you come to a town where Jews were and there is no synagogue, then you can be sure there were less than 10 Jewish men in town. That seems to be the case up at Philippi, for example, in the second mission journey of Paul. There were only a group of women there that had, they were probably God-fearers, that is, proselytes, potential proselytes for the synagogue. They worshipped at a riverside location. That's one example of where the synagogue is missing. But when you have 10 Jewish men, you have to establish a synagogue. Then the size of the thing will, again, enable archaeologists and historians to figure out the size of the city. But the best rule, as a matter of fact, to decide the population of an ancient town would be the theater. How big is the theater? And usually the rule is the town has about four times the seating capacity of the theater.
Because that was kind of like the town movie house? Is that the thinking
there? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
So when archaeologists come across something like this, what needs to be done at a site like this, Dr. Meyer, to mine it, so to speak, for all that it's worth, now that they've established that they are looking at a synagogue and perhaps the town of Magdala itself? What would you want them to be looking for there?
Yeah, I would say take away that perhaps. It's pretty definitely Magdala. I mean, you know, they haven't found the city sign with the Kiwanis, you know, we meet Thursdays at the so-and-so hotel. I mean, they haven't found that. But nevertheless, it satisfies, especially those brine pools. They discovered salt, you know, on the sidings, dried, desiccated salt. The procedure generally often happens this way. Now, Father Solara had planned this Christian retreat center, and they were ready to build a shrine for ecumenical worship at one side of it. But when they dug 1 foot under the present turf, they found the beginnings of the synagogue area. And so naturally they had to change their plans. And now their retreat center is going to be moved over a little bit. The hotel building will continue. But once again, I'm just amazed that that hasn't happened more often along the Sea of Galilee. They have one of these in Jerusalem, one in Bethlehem, and now one in Galilee. I'm surprised the place isn't littered with these hotels, pilgrim hotels.
Now, I guess that kind of raises a question that if you're going to put a spade into the ground in this area of the world, they check for archaeological artifacts before they start digging the basement.
They absolutely do. When you're going to dig anything, when you're going to put the foundation in of anything, before you even lay the first foundation footing, you have to do an archaeological survey. This means the IAA, the Israel Antiquities Authority, will send a group out to do what's called a quick archaeological survey. And if they don't find anything, fine, then the buildings can go ahead and be built. But if they find something, that halts the building operations right there.
So the Father Solaris might get a better deal than he thought he was going to get. He now has a genuine attraction on his hands, not just a resort for Christian tourists.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. And how beautiful for a Christian retreat center to be built right at Magdala itself, the home of Mary Magdalene.
When Christians think about the history that stands beneath our feet in places like the Holy Land, and they wonder, you know, what's yet to be discovered, what has been discovered, how would you summarize the sum of archaeological discovery to this point? And it's happening now almost every month. Well, how would you summarize the treasure trove of what has been discovered there with about 30 seconds?
Well, I'd say it's one of the most exciting times for Christians to be alive because of the latter-day blessings of archaeology. Archaeological science is only 125 years old, and the church is 2,000. So you can see that for less than 6% of church history have we had the blessings of this marvelous source of hard evidence, which time and time again confirms the biblical record left and right, no question about it. You don't hear that. You always hear from the blowhards and the sensationalists who try to say there's no correlation or that the Bible's wrong. No, that's absolutely wrong. I would say 90% of the finds that are discovered in the Holy Land archaeologically rather immediately confirm the biblical record.
Dr. Paul Meyer is Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, author of numerous books, including his latest publication, The Constantine Codex. You can check this book out at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Meyer, thank you very much.
Fun being with you, Todd. Blessings.
Folks, you have heard The Liner, your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth about issues, etc. Well, today's show is a great example of truth in advertising. We talked with George Conger about media coverage of the Satanic Black Mass at Harvard, about an abortion bill in Missouri with Pam Fichter. Chris Roseborough was our guest to talk about the Hebrew Roots Movement. Alan Carlson about the true history of American sexuality, and Dr. Paul Meyer on this archaeological discovery. It's a great breadth of guests and topics. Now, if you appreciate the information, teaching, and truth you hear on Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of this program. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Now, for any size gift during the Easter season, before Pentecost Sunday, June 8th, we'll send you a CD of two sermons, one on the resurrection and the other on the book of Job. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind during the 50 days of Easter. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Noted author and history professor Dr. Paul Meyer on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
I'm delighted not only to listen to Issues Etc., but also to have the privilege of being on the program from time to time. Issues is never afraid to take a stand on the thorny, vexing issues that clutter our daily horizons. And it does so in the name of a solidly based Christianity that doesn't flirt with fads or fantasies. Whereas some Christian programs sidestep ethical and doctrinal questions in our day, Issues takes them head-on in a fearless, responsible, thoughtful manner. Both head and heart are involved when Issues applies Holy Scripture.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.